Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in today to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Mortality is something each of us must face. Many of us fear dying, and those of us who do not want to talk about it. Well, it's only natural to fear the unknown, especially when we believe it is a finite act. It's hard to imagine that we could ever cease to exist. But is that fear warranted? Is death really an end? Could it possibly be a beginning or even a continuation of the journey of our souls? What if I told you that there is more evidence supporting an afterlife than not supporting it? Throughout history, many people, perhaps thousands or even millions, have reported experiences of glimpsing the other side, or heaven, as many like to call it. My guest today is one of those individuals. He is certain that life goes on, that we never die, because he experienced that truth for himself. My guest, Robert Kopecky, has had three near-death experiences, and he is here to tell us about them. Even more importantly, he is here to tell us what he learned from each of them, how death taught him how to live. Before I introduce my guest to you, let me first give you Robert's background. Robert Kopecky survived a childhood of loss and trauma. He traveled extensively, living a variety of lives, finally becoming an award-winning illustrator, art director, and animation designer for clients like the New York Times and PBS Kids. The unusual course of his life was tragically punctured by three dramatic, distinctly different near-death experiences. Eventually, his path delivered him to his own dark night of the soul, followed by more than a decade of study, meditation, and service. The eventual transpersonal realization of what life and death are and can be inspired him to write and teach, passing along those lessons he'd learned the hard way. His first book, How to Survive Life and Death, A Guide for Happiness in This World and Beyond, was published in 2014 by Conary Press. He continues to design animation for ads, TV, and internet, and writes spiritual essays and memoir that appear at Gaiam TV, Soul Lifetimes, Belief.net, and more, and on his blog, Art, Faith, and the Coco Lion, K-O-K-O Lion, at robertkopecky.blogspot.com. And now it is my honor and privilege to introduce you to my special guest, Robert Kopecky. Hi, Robert.
The privilege is all mine. Thank you so much for that nice introduction.
Well, thank you for coming on and sharing with us. You have a lot to tell us today. So you're basically an artist and those kind of things. And now all of a sudden you're in this whole life and death spiritual thing. Can you tell us how all that came about?
Yeah, I find myself kind of in the middle of the whole thing. I had never really expected to. It came about, you know, it was a calling. You know, I think a lot of us who come up with these books sort of out of the ether, out of our hearts, it's a calling to do it. I had a difficult childhood, as you mentioned in the opening intro, and really it was kind of mystical too. I wasn't religious at all as a child. I didn't have any experience. My family wasn't religious at all, but I kind of found myself searching, and I ended up on a searching path for most of my life, and kind of went, as you said in the intro, from life to life to life, you know. And I had these experiences throughout, these three different near-death experiences that, and I think you'll hear a lot of us say this, they didn't really faze me that much during the time that they happened. I mean, I don't recommend having three NDEs as a self-realization, right? I think there's probably better ways to go about it. But, you know, finally in my life, I had perhaps an even more profound sort of death. You know, it seems to me like our souls apparently require or prefer this kind of death experience from one actual life to another, or just from one life to another within our lives. You know, where for me, my life stopped working, and I just reached a point of kind of a spiritual vacuum. And you mentioned it as a dark night of the soul, and I think that that's a typical thing for people to experience too, who have this kind of turnaround. I had a 180 in my life, and you know, I started to write then and to kind of change my whole direction in life, and this surfaced for me. It kind of really coalesced, and I set it down, and people were interested in it. And the next thing I knew, I was in the middle of the near-death experience movement. Because there are a lot of people. I was looking into it. It's considered that maybe up to 15% of people globally have had near-death experiences.
That is unbelievable. That's a huge statistic.
A lot of near-death experience, isn't it?
Right. Well, obviously the spirit world is trying to share something with us. Otherwise, this wouldn't keep happening. Can you tell us about the first near-death experience that you had?
Yeah, sure. The first one was, all three of them were kind of typical. You know, there were things that you have heard people describe about near-death experience before, and if you look at the list of things that happen to people who go through this, they're on the list. My first one was, I had a single-car accident. The very next moment after the accident itself, which I was not aware of, I was fussing with a cassette tape player. That tells you what year it was. It was back in the in my car that had messed up. And I hit a telephone pole, apparently, glanced off of something and hit a telephone pole. And the very next instant, I found myself at the level of the street light at the top of the telephone pole, looking down on the scene of the crashed car and my body. I could look over hedges into people's yards and see people running out and calling to each other to get the ambulance. And I saw the ambulance pull up, and I watched this whole thing, you know, from outside of my body. And I wasn't alone. I had the perception of there being a benevolent entity, but kind of behind me. I never turned around and confronted them. I don't know who they were exactly, but, you know, now I have certain ideas about that, certain beliefs about who that was. And they ultimately sort of shepherded me off into kind of a soft, warm cloud to a place that was very lovely and pastoral, almost like a nice outdoor cafe or something kind of like that. And we had this conversation about some very important things. We hashed out some very important things. And I was actually unconscious for about 18 hours or so, and was released from the hospital about a day and a half after I was admitted, and immediately kind of went back to my material life, so to speak, and started worrying about you know, the car and insurance and my wife and what I would tell people and when I could get back to work and all of that kind of stuff.
But right.
I had
all the concerns of living in this linear world.
It did not register. I mean, it did register deeply on me that I was a spirit, obviously, who was just. I went back a few days later and I looked at the scene and I surveyed all the areas that I could see from on top of the telephone pole that I couldn't see from the street. And they were all right where I'd seen them. Everything, you know, rows of trash cans back in alleys and all that stuff that I couldn't see from the street were where they were that I had seen from the top of the telephone pole. So I even went back and made sure the evidence was right. But it registered very deeply on me, but not enough at the moment to change my path at that time in life. You know,
were you aware of reentering your body or not?
No, not so much. You know, I just, that was the third one. that was my third one. The first
okay.
one I wasn't. I just kind of came to, you know, and I was in a hospital room and a nurse came in a little while later and there's very little exchange. I didn't have health insurance, so they just wheeled me out to the curb with a bandaged head and put me in a cab that took me home. And that was that was my hospital experience.
Wow. Well, and so, and you knew that you had died, right?
Yeah, you know, I heavily suspected it, right? I mean, the recollection of where I had been and the viewpoint I had on things and of having been out of my body and seeing my body, it's kind of shocking, you know, when you look down and there's your body and it's messed up. That was fresh for me. But, you know, I kind of suppressed it. I moved on back into life again. And that experience didn't really crystallize until many years later when I had this sort of more profound kind of death of my spirit where I didn't actually have a near-death experience. I just came to a point in my life where all the material structure of my life stopped working for me. And I kind of died to all of that. It all fell apart around me. And, you know, I was able to touch that humility that really is the basis for true spiritual growth. And I started meditating and studying and all that kind of stuff. And then these experiences crystallized for me.
What was your second? So did you have three actual NDEs, or was that center one what you consider a death in sort?
Yeah, it was like the least official one because there were no hospitals involved. But
okay.
I lost consciousness. I had spun off into a riotous lifestyle. My favorite aunt, who had kind of saved my life when I was a kid and was a real spiritual guardian for me and still is, by the way, I was present for her death, caused by malpractice. And it kind of spun me off into a world of acting out in a material way. And I did all the wrong things with all the wrong people. My first marriage ended. It was kind of a death in a way for me, too. You know, I kind of died to a life that I had. And as a result of those antics, I ended up with what I charitably call a toxic reaction to my lifestyle. and ended up on the floor, losing vision, losing all sense of life, and having the room fill in with a bright white cloud that is kind of like what you would see out the window of an aircraft flying at high altitude. If you're up in the clouds where it's sunny, bright, brilliant white cloud. And in the midst of it, a screen opened up and started showing me scenes from my life, which is another typical NDE, right?
Right.
And they weren't it wasn't the golden moments, the best of real. It was kind of forgettable. These were episodes that I had sort of forgotten, but they were very cogent. They were pivotal, seminal sort of scenes that I'd failed to learn from, but that were then shown to me so that I could learn from them and come to realize that each moment of interaction in this life can be very profound on an eternal scale, on a much larger scale. And so we need to be present for each panel of time that we experience, you know.
That is absolutely true, and that's something that's hard to remember, but that we all should remember because, yeah, I have heard that we face this this screen or whatever it is, and we're shown our lives and we're shown what we did wrong, and we feel deeply, we feel very empathically for those who were affected, and and so if we think about that and we know that that's what's to come, really it helps us to live a different kind of life where we really don't hurt others and don't hurt ourselves.
Well, yeah,
what happened? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All of these experiences indicated to me, and you know what I've come to believe is that there is this invisible spiritual mechanism that's at work just underneath the surface of this life. You know, a good example of that is that when I recalled one of these instances, one of these episodes that I was shown in that second near-death experience, it was when I was a little boy. I had threatened another little boy in kind of a serious way. And he was a sensitive guy. He was a sensitive kid. And I remember it hurting him, registering on him very deeply. And I had suppressed that memory. I had forgotten about having kind of caused that young person pain in my young life. Well, I have some friends who were part of my riotous lifestyle. These crazy guys had told me that this fellow had committed suicide. That's why I hadn't heard about him for years.
Oh my goodness.
I believed them because he was such a sensitive fellow. And I had this pang of guilt in my heart that was a partial recollection of that instance in our childhood. Well, he got in contact with me recently. He's not dead.
Really?
He didn't commit suicide. These guys were lying to me. And now we are back in touch with one another, the magic of social media, you know. And it is more evidence of the unseen, of this system that's at work that I have absolute faith in now in my life and that I want to pass on to your listeners, that I'm sure many of them are already on the same page, right? But those kinds of things, those synchronicities and those coincidences aren't so much coincidence. They really are the evidence of this spiritual system that we're all participating in.
I so agree with you. I so agree with you. We're shown things all the time that ease our path through the, you know, through our journey here. If we just follow these signs and just go with it and not ignore them, it's a more direct path to where we're supposed to go.
Yeah,
so what happened? What happened with your third one? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just saying that's what the second one taught me, is to pay attention, right? The third one was another typical instance. I never walked into the tunnel or saw the light like that, so to speak. So that didn't happen for me, as it has for so many people. But in this case, I was assaulted by a gang of skinheads. I don't know if you know what skinheads are, but they're these kind of disaffected youth, this sort of neo-Nazi, quasi-military sort of. And this one kid basically attacked me, and I fought back kind of successfully, but I didn't realize that there was a whole bunch of them. And they hit me from behind with something very hard, like a tire iron or something like that, and knocked me out and then sort of stomped and kicked me for the better part of an hour. And that one required, lots of medical care, medical assistance. But in terms of the experience on the other side, so to speak, it was not as comfortable. It was not as friendly. I had not been living my life the right way. I hadn't gone about dying the proper way, I guess. And I had things left to do. So it was a friendly enough feeling place that I was in, but it was a little bit darker and there was a little bit more sort of authority asserted, and I wanted to stay very badly. I did not want to return to this life, and I was coerced or gently sort of forced back into this life to do things in a more appropriate way and to discover what my real purpose was and to express it. And that was a pretty powerful one. I opened up my eyes laying on the sidewalk in a small town in Arizona where it took place. And I looked up into the eyes of an emergency medical technician looking down at me, and he said, "He's back." And it was just a couple years after that that I got to that point in my life where I was able to turn things around, and for all those three experiences to crystallize in my experience of life. And you know, I started writing, and I had an art blog for my animation design and illustration, and I started posting spiritual blogs on it, and they became more and more popular. And I kind of was called to write this book, and I did, and it got bought by a nice publisher, and it's all miraculous to me, believe me.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, talk about getting hit over the head to try to get a message across to you.
And over the head, and over the head, you know, that's what it takes for some people, I guess.
Right, it does, it does. But you finally got it, and now you're able to share it, so it... Gosh, to know that your life has so much meaning that they sent you back three times, that is incredible.
Everyone's life does have so much meaning, really. You know, we're all, in a way, we're living the same life. We all have the same thoughts and fears and wishes. And, you know, it's so clear to me that it really is a continuum. You know, my experience of after the afterlife, so to speak. I don't mean to, you know, sound like an authority on the afterlife, because I'm not an authority on this life, right? I mean, people have very different lives in this world. They're, you know, you could describe entirely different things, and I think that has something to do with why near-death experiences are often so differently described too. But the one thing that was clear is that consciousness continues. I was conscious. I had a sense of myself. I did not feel the divisions or the separations that my bodily form creates for me all the time. I did feel a complete kind of unity and ease of being. And, you know, these are typical things for us. I think your listeners can rely on this being a profound truth for us here, all sharing this experience of life together, that we don't end. That, you know, I say I had a difficult childhood, but what it really means is it was kind of something difficult that happened in the middle of my being that I needed to experience in this form. And so this form provides us with obstacles that we are here to overcome. And like Joseph Campbell used to say, answer the metaphysical impulse to transcend the illusion of separateness.
Say that again. Say that again.
Answer a metaphysical impulse to transcend the illusion of separateness.
Okay. I like that too.
I wish I were smart enough to think of stuff like that.
Wow.
It's really great, isn't it?
Wow. He said it like 4 words or whatever, 10 words. I don't know, whatever it is. I wasn't counting.
Right.
You talk about three tips for happiness: radical kindness, radical forgiveness, and radical surrender. Can you tell us about these three tips for happiness?
Yeah. Like I was saying, you know, if our bodily form is kind of this obstacle to realizing, you know, the spiritual nature of our being, then there are ways that we can access that. And I put these handles on these three doorways, kind of as radical kindness, radical forgiveness, and radical surrender, because for me, I see them as mechanisms to access this ease of being and this kind of unifying reality. Radical kindness, I like to give to people as a challenge, just to be as absolutely kind to everybody as you possibly can be all the time, no matter who they are, no matter what your situation, and engage with them open-heartedly and sincerely, and watch what happens. You know, it will completely change your life. You know, friends and compatriots and co-conspirators and stuff will just come out of the woodwork, and there are so many kind people out there that you'll be drawn together into this kind of fabric of kindness that you may have never realized existed. And the world just becomes such a beautiful place to live in. You know, They used to say courtesy is contagious to us when I was in school.
And, right. It's very true.
Same idea. But that access is, it opens your heart. You know, what I'm talking about is not engaging the world so much with what you think of it and what your intellectual process is, but really through your heart, which is capable of a more profound cognition, you know, like that intuitive intelligence, you know, that compassionate consciousness is really what I'm talking about, where you knew something was true. And I like to say, many of the worst things I ever did, I thought about a lot first, right? And I knew that they were wrong all along because my heart was telling me that. Well, when we use these mechanisms that can open our hearts and engage ourselves in our life that way, that's a doorway into that spiritual reality that's just right under the surface of everything, and getting closer to the surface all the time, you know, as more consciousness grows in the world.
That is such an important message for all of us to hear. I think we may know that on a soul level,
yeah,
but we get very caught up in living in this physical world, and it becomes hard to remember that basically it all comes down to love, and we are all parts of the same source, and we are all equally lovable.
Absolutely.
Regardless of our actions, it doesn't mean that we're not worthy of being loved.
Well, you really hit on something there that I think is important. It has to do with why it can be so difficult to get there from here sometimes, you know, to move that 2 feet from your head to your heart sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
is that we all have these sort of two histories, you know, going on at the same time. You might call one a case history, where you live, who you're with, who you work for, how much money you have in your bank account, et cetera, all the stuff that shows up on the insurance form, you know, that kind of, or in my case, on the police report, you know. And then we have this other life that's running parallel to it that is a spiritual life. It's a spiritual history. It's all those things that happened to us in our heart that made the profound changes in our life, right, that are making us who we are and are presenting us with the potential for who we can be. And so the less we pay to the material stuff, simply put, then the more we merge those two things together. And if you go back to some old teaching, like from the Bible, they say that when you make the two into one, you can tell the mountain to move, and it will move.
Wow.
And so that's what this is about. It's about realizing that we are living a spiritual life, even while we're engaged in all the materials, all the material stuff, all the material nonsense.
Right, which, you know, supposedly is an illusion. It's supposed to be an illusion. So.
But you got to pay rent, and your landlord doesn't know it's an illusion. He is not.
Right. That's
not
true.
An illusion, you know? So
we have to live out this physical life. We do. We're here for a reason. We have to live it out. What is radical forgiveness?
Radical forgiveness is not as much fun as radical kindness, because it usually means somebody done you wrong, you know. Although it also applies to ourselves. It's like realizing the terrible thing someone did to me is actually the terrible thing I did to them.
Mm.
I hate when that happens. But it's basically, it is what it sounds like. Everybody is going through the same experience. Your life is not easy. So when you're in one of these situations with someone where they are not treating you right or something bad has happened to you, it's an expression of the pain that they're carrying in their life, you know. And when you recognize that as being the case, then you can just forgive them as completely as you possibly can right in that moment. And then it takes vigilance. You have to keep repeating it because our minds want to bring up the hurt over and over again.
Right, or judge. Right, or judge them.
Right, exactly. Yeah, when you drop the comparison and judgment about it, and and recognize that it's an expression of what's in their psyche, of whatever trauma they went through, of what they need to express in their life, then you don't have to carry that which belongs to them in yourself anymore. You can put it down, you can move on from it, and you can become what you're supposed to be. And I'll tell a friend of mine this, a mentor of mine this, and he says, you know, you're very spiritual about that, Robert, but some people are just jerks.
That sounds like a comment my husband would make.
Right. That's why he's one of my best friends. It's because back to earth.
Right? Yeah, my husband doesn't get this at all.
You don't want to carry their stuff around.
Right, right.
I've got plenty of my own, thank you, you know, that I'm trying to set down all the time. So that's radical forgiveness. And radical surrender then, which, again, radical forgiveness, you know, this is part of the confession and amends making and stuff like that that you see in spiritual practices throughout history. It's another mechanism that helps us access that spiritual beingness, that comfort of being, that ease of being. And the most effective one is radical surrender, which is happening all the time to you, particularly when things are going good, right? When things are going well in your life, it's hard to remember to consider it, but you are radically surrendered, right? There's no reason to change anything or to struggle because everything is going great. When things get tough, now you start to feel like there must be something you can change, like there must be some force of will that you can bring to bear to change circumstances, which may or may not really be true. Radical surrender doesn't sound like a good thing. Surrender, you know, not me. I'm going to fight to the bitter end, right? But the universe is going to win, and there is no end, so there's just bitter is all you have when you do things that way.
That's
if
right.
You recognize that this benevolent force is really there all the time, just like when things are going good, then when things are going bad, you can open your heart and surrender back into that and, you know, allow life to carry you. You're passing through a difficult place. It has a beginning, a middle, and then you're past it, and then you're into a new place. So I like to say something that I heard somewhere, when you're going through hell, keep going.
Okay? Keep going, right? Right.
There. Keep moving through. So that's what radical surrender is all about.
Wow, these are very profound thoughts that you have, and yet so simple. This radical surrender thing, yeah, the more we fight things, actually, when we fear or when we have negative thoughts or whatever, all we create is more fear and more negative thoughts. So surrendering is really the only thing that we can do that takes a great amount of faith and trust that there is something bigger than we are.
Yeah, you know, for me, that's love. You know, this is another realization that many near-death experiencers have is of this sort of overwhelming field of love. You know, what you're describing is really typical for people who are experimenting with something like The Secret, for example, you know, where you really want to have the right feelings in your heart so that you can manifest the life that you want, but when it doesn't happen on your schedule, then you feel like you're doing something wrong. And so now you're carrying negativity around, and it makes you feel even worse.
Right.
Know?
Right. I thought that I had blockages in my life that were maybe coming from another life or something like that,
right,
only to find out that the blockages were self-made. And once I changed my way of thinking, it all opened up. Quickly,
yeah.
Like
yeah,
that
yeah.
day.
We're always living now, right? We're always living in this discrete panel of time, and eternity is not some great expanse of time beyond us. Eternity is right here in this moment all the time, right? And if
right.
we can attach ourselves to love and engage it through our open heart, then heaven is here. You know, heaven is spread across the earth, but men don't have eyes to see it. The Gospel of Thomas, one of my favorite things, says that. And, you know, you can get it here. So when some people have near-death experiences that are of hell, you know, they have hellish experiences, and some people's lives on this earth are like that, too. You know, but by engaging in this open-hearted way and following the love, looking for the love, allowing love to show you in its many, many forms, you know, people, places, and material things, food, clothing, architecture, right? Entertainment. A lot of it is carrying a message of love. A lot of it is carrying a message of fear. If you enter into the fear stuff, you get the fear stuff. If you enter into the love, now you're connected with, you know, this, the gift of consciousness that we all share. As animals, too, by the way, we all share this consciousness.
I agree with you. Yeah, I can look into an animal's eyes, any kind of animal, and see its soul.
There you are. Right? Connect with love,
yeah.
Right? There's
right.
The divine source right there. And animals
right there.
Have that just naturally, right? They don't have the intellectual barriers that we seem to have, the kind of why we got kicked out of the garden.
Yeah, they're pure.
Evil all the time.
Right? Yeah, they are. They're pure. They're beautiful, which is why I don't eat them. That's a whole other story. Are you a vegetarian as well?
I think it's the same story. I really do, Randy, you know, because that happened to me. I wasn't. And then as I entered into this way of living, it just arose within me that I could not. I went to a state fair and I saw some calves. And I looked into their big brown eyes and I realized I could never eat meat again.
Oh, that's
tough. I was always a tough guy, right? You know?
Yeah. Well, you're not anymore. Well, we're coming kind of to the end, and I want to give you a chance to tell everybody, you know, about your book, how they can get it, how they can reach you, and just, you know, go ahead and tell us about you.
Sure, I appreciate that opportunity. Thank you for that. The book is called How to Survive Life and Death. And it's available everywhere. You know, you can get it in all the regular online ways. I always like to recommend that people get it at their local bookstore or ask for it at their local bookstore because I love local bookstores and I think we should support them. My blog, robertkopecky.blogspot.com. I write a lot of spiritual stuff on there. I got a Facebook author page that has a lot of my media on it, so all these places like Daily Om or Soul Lifetimes or The Mindful Word or Gaiam TV, where I'm writing stuff for nowadays, that's all listed on there, or there are links to all that on there. And, you know, I just love being able to hear from people that are on the same page, you know, or part of the change that's going on. I love the song at the beginning of your show, right, that has the great Mahatma Gandhi quote in it, to be the change that you would see in the world yourself.
Yes, I love that song. I do. I just thought that was so apropos for my show and what I'm trying to, the message I'm trying to send out. There's a better way. Be the change, yeah.
Yeah, and it's
love
an exponential growth of our soul together. Right, we're taking part in it together. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it, but it is.
Right, it is. And as much as we learn, there's that much more to learn. As much as we grow, there's that much more to grow.
Yeah.
So I always say, you know, this is a wild ride. We're on it, and just put on your seatbelt and and get going.
And don't do it the way I did it. Okay. You can read my book, and then you can skip all that painful
Oh, it's great. Well, it's been so wonderful having you on, Robert. And I think that your messages are so important for everyone to hear, and I'm really, really grateful that you were able to share them with us. So thank you for coming on today.
Well, thank you, Randy. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, it's great. All right. We'll keep in touch.
Okay.
All right. Have a great day. Unfortunately, our time is up for today, but if you have any comments about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. And I want to tell you about the newest thing I have. I just started a Facebook page called Empath Society, E-M-P-A-T-H, because I wrote an article and so many people saw themselves as empaths after reading this article that I started getting floods and floods of messages. And I decided that we needed a community. So if you recognize yourself as an empath or curious about it, any of those things, go to Facebook and just look up Empath Society and like us and start joining in the conversation. Friendships are being made. The page is only 2 days old and friendships are already being made. So I'm really, really proud of that. The other thing is my counseling service. You can speak to me privately and confidentially on the telephone about any issues that concern you. So if you are interested in that and you feel like you need somebody to talk to, you can go to my site, clarity.fm/randy-g-fine, and I'll spell that. It's C-L-A-R-I-T-Y dot, F as in Frank, M as in Mary, slash Randy, R-A-N-D-I, hyphen, G, hyphen, fine, F-I-N-E. If you enjoy listening to my shows, please become a show follower. At the top of every show is a button you can push and or click on, whatever, and you can become a follower, and that way you'll get notifications of everything I'm doing. Visit my blog at randygfine.com for even more inspiration and join the list of devoted followers there. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randygfine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be the change. Be the change. There's a better way.